Today's presenters are Brad Dixon and Bill Buffett. Brad has provided level 2 support for kicks on the MVS and VSE platform since 1985. He has worked on Kicks Plus SM since 1996, and Brad was instrumental in setting up level 2 support for the Kicks tool portfolio. Bill Buffin, provides level 2 worldwide remote technical support to the Kicks tools portfolio of products in Kicks Plus SM. Bill has provided level 2 support for Kicks Plus SM since its introduction into the marketplace. He has performed post-installation activities for Kicks Plus SM at more than 60 customer locations. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Brad.
Good day and welcome to our best practices for maintaining a healthy CPSM configuration. So if we'll go over to 401, we'll go ahead and get started. This is going to be pretty tight, so we want to move ahead. I'll go through the agenda right quick. Some of the best things we'd like to see customers do is to use message automation. Be very careful about CMAS max tasks and just don't let it occur. Maintaining our one file, the data repository, keeping up with debugging information by the holding on to logs and auxiliary trace. Talk about the consequences or the benefits of running multiple CMASs on a single LPAR. How to look after storage usage in the CPSM environment. Talk about maintenance a little bit, dumping CPSM, what it entails, EYU BARMs and SIT farms that are necessary. Now, I'd want to like to make a point here. We're service personnel, so we are very keyed in on acquiring good debugging information. You're here holding on to Kicks traces and maintaining Kicks logs over and over again throughout this presentation. This agenda is not in a priority sequence by any means, and we could generate a full pitch just on talking about maintaining the CPSM data repository. Let's go to slide 3, please. So message automation, we'll talk about the Kicks messages first. Every time CICS switches orchestrated data sets, it issues the message DFHTR0110. You need to set up some sort of automation so that when these things switch, that you hold on to them. You need to archive the unused or the orchestrated data set that is not being written to. Some of the things that happens in CPSM is that if the CMAS itself goes short on storage, we're in a lot of trouble. So if you have any automation in place that will cause pagers to go off, operators to be awakened, or whatever, that needs to happen. The operators need to save the aux traces and the logs from the CMAS, and generally have access to, and if you're running short on storage, they need to be able to get in and dynamically change the EDSA limit if possible. Slide 4, please. The CPSM messages, one of the most critical ones is EYU XD011E, which means that our one and only file has run out of space. This is a very critical situation. We'll talk a little bit more about this later on, but we're going to need, here again, the aux traces and the complete job output from the CMAS that this is happening to. These EYU CP messages, these are messages that indicate that a CMAS has been isolated or taken out of the Kicksplex environment. When this happens, it's usually pretty obvious in a production environment, but sometimes in a test or a quality assurance environment, this might not be noticed for days. So here again, automation needs to be put in place to save our traces and our logs, so that we can debug the problem and give you a fix. Slide 5, please. One of the worst things that can happen is the CMAS hitting max task. And we want to prevent that. And one of the ways that we do that is to cause a stressful situation. Under The first bullet, a big bang is when we refer to all of the CMASs and all of the KIX regions are all coming up at the same time. This causes a lot of traffic to be produced throughout the Plex. A lot of transactions get kicked off and a lot of storage is used. Once this big bang has settled down, which takes a little bit for that to occur, you should run the CICS supply transaction STAT. This gives you a lot of good information. It tells you about your how many tasks were running, your peak number, how much storage was being used. It also gives you a lot of information about tracing and stuff like that. In CICS, you ought to run with monitoring, the CICS monitoring facility in the CMAS. You know, the CMAS runs on a KIX region, and it has that monitoring capability. It doesn't affect the throughput of your working regions, okay? And one other thing, no monitoring products are supported in a CMAS environment. This also provides good CMS data for use later on. If we need for debugging, it's just good to know baseline information. So can we go on to slide 6, please? I mentioned the stat transaction. You can find that in the group VFH$STAT. As I said earlier, run this in all of your CMASs. All of the CMASs have connected and all the MASs have connected. Like I said earlier, this will do max tasks, give you an idea on max tasks. It also provides information about the workload management service class. If you're not running your CMAS at SIS STC service class, every time that you bring a CMAS up or every time that a MAS connects, you'll get a message, EYUCL0023, reminding you that you're not running at the fastest or an adequate service class for a CMAS. I make this point here is that the CMAS is managing your KIXs. And if your CMAS can't communicate because it's not getting enough CPU, then things can back up and can cause a lot of problems. So try to make sure that your CMASs are always running at a higher priority than any of your KIX regions. Slide 7, please. Here we say that you should not have a dummy syslog or log stream for the in a CMAS. You can run dummy, but you're not going to be able to recover that EYU DREF. So we would like to make sure that you have a real log stream defined in each CMAS. In setting up a KIXPLEX, you need to be very careful about choosing your CMAS name, your Apple IDs, and your KIX sysidents. Because I tell you, once we have defined this, it's very difficult to go in and make changes after the fact. So please be careful when you're setting up your first KIXPLEX. One of the things that we run into is that the WUI under 3.2, we are no longer shipping a TSO interface as part of the CPSM product. So the only thing that you really have is a web user interface. And one of the advantages that, and under, the new release of CPSM, the EYU9XDUT utility will go ahead and define a WUI for you so that when you first come up, you can go ahead and start doing CPSM things immediately. Slide 8, please. The EYU DREF, it's difficult to size this. It's a KIXPLEX can range anything from a couple of three CICS regions to thousands of KIX regions. So to give you a default number of this is how big an EYU DREF should be is impossible to do. So here's some hints and tips on how you can kind of guess or intelligently guess on building the size of the EYU DREF. If you're running an existing Plex already, go ahead and run a listcat against EYU DREF. We'd like to keep you around 50% usage in that situation. So if you're running a lot over 50%, if you're running like 90%, you need to think about getting a, or building a larger EYU DRES. If you're talking about a newly created KickSplex SM environment, one of the things you can do, and this is can be handy over time, because one of the biggest problems in CPSM is growth. As you get bigger and bigger and bigger, you have to accommodate it. So one of the things you can do is to bring up a CMAS and a WUI pair and run Let's-Cat against EYU DREP. Make note of that, and then bring up maybe a Kix TOR. He's going to have probably a lot of terminal definitions, but little else. Make a note of that. How much space did that take? And then bring up your AORs, FORs, etc., one at a time, and get an idea of how much space each one of these guys take. And once you multiply that across your entire plex, multiple LPARs and everything else, that'll give you an idea on how big your EYU DREP ought to be. The default size is records 500, 3000, but that's not really, like I said, it can vary a lot in size. And one other note is before you take the LISCAT, give about 5 minutes after each one of these regions come up. That allows the data to be hardened onto DREP, and the size will be more accurate. Could I have slide 9, please? So when you run out of space on DREP, that's really a critical situation for a CMAS and for a fixed flex environment. So over time, this has happened numerous times because you never realize when it's going to happen. You just make a connection between two CMASs, and the next thing you know, the size of EYU DREP is doubled, and you need that space. So we've provided a utility, EYU JXDRP, and it's a nice utility. It comes in SEYU SAMP, and what it does is allows you, it's a ID CAMS defined for a new EYU DREP and then a repro to it. And the naming conventions is down there below. You'll see the original EYU DREP becomes old rep, and then the new DREP acquires its new name. So slide 10.
Before going to the next chart, if you cannot join the e-meeting, you can still access the presentation by going to IBM.com and typing 701-0426 in the search box at the very top of the page. A technical document with the PDF file will display. Thank you. I will now turn the presentation back to Bill.
All right, let's go on to slide 10. When you have a problem, and it's typically, you know, when you're doing maintenance or it's off hours, quite often the operators need to take an action. One of those actions sometimes people will take is let's just cycle the CMAS address space to see if it'll get us around a problem. Quite often it does. But then later we'll have a problem opened up when you're trying to solve the root cause. And sometimes we need to go back and see what happened when the CMAS had shut down previously. How did it terminate? And quite often the answer is we never save those logs. They're gone. We cycle the CMAS multiple times and we don't have it. So just a recommended practice that we would like to see from the server side is that you always save your CMAS logs from the CMAS and from a WUI server. The last 5 would be great. Typically, it's rare that I think we've ever had to go back more than that. The last part on this slide, it's not just the JES message log. Quite often, users will just FTP in the logs, and they only send the JES message log. We need to see also the message user and the EYU log. There's a lot of messages that only go to those other two sources as well. So please send, if you can, the entire logs from the CMAS and a WUI server. Let's go on to slide 11. On the next few slides, we'll just talk about the auxiliary trace data sets for a CMAS and their importance. Again, this goes back to recycling primarily. Quite often, when you have to recycle, there's nothing in place to save the auxiliary trace data sets. CMASs, sometimes customers will cycle them nightly. Sometimes they will cycle them weekly. Sometimes they'll cycle them only when they're going to IPL the LPAR, and that can go 2 to 3 months at a time. So there's not a recommended time to recycle a sea mat, so sometimes they go very long. We capture all of the exceptional information in the auxiliary trace data sets. Many customers, when they see that aux trace is turned on, they turn it off and say, I don't want a one aux trace. We don't do that here. But for a CMAS, we're not capturing CICS trace. We're only capturing exceptions that are interesting to us. And it's important that we get those. When you cycle a CMAS, if you haven't saved them and then you have a problem, we can't help you because we'll go back and need to see the exceptions that occurred for the last several weeks and they're gone. So in the next few slides, there's just some recommendations on how to manage the auxiliary trace data sets for a CMAS. One of the things you can do is use SMS managed storage when you define your DFH, AUXT, and BUXT data sets. I typically use DSN type of extended preferred. If it's available, you'll have it. The extended preferred and extended requested DSN types were added in ZOS 1.7 and beyond. And then the last thing on there is also on the DD statement in your CMAS startups, use buff no equals 10 for both the AUXT and BUXT data set that will get better I.O. performance when you're running. Let's go on to slide 12. In this one, this is a sample of the IDCAMP jobs to define a generation data group for both the A and the B auxiliary trace data set copies. In this example, I have the options empty, which does when you fill up the limit, it'll go ahead and turn around, and no scratch says to keep them. And I just pick a limit of 5. Typically, that should be enough. That'll get me 5 generations of a copy of my auxiliary trace data sets. Let's go on to slide 13. This is just a sample of the allocation of the CMAS auxiliary trace data sets A and B. And here they're using the extended preferred DSN type, a Stripe data class, and the same for the storage class. The space in here, you'll see I had 440 cylinders. If your CMAS is going to be up for long times, up to an IPL, you don't typically have many CMAS in an environment. Give it the space it needs up front to avoid having to extend. Let's go on to slide 14. Here are 2 steps that I put in the start of my CMAS JCL. And what this does is it helps in the situation where they're either planned or unplanned recycling on a CMAS. So the first thing I do when my CMAS is run is I have 2 IED Gener copy steps where I copy my auxiliary trace data sets to a generation data set. This allows me to always be able to go back, and when we need to look at what occurred, it'll be sitting in one of the previous generations. Let's go on to slide 15. Another area of interest where questions have come in the past is running multiple CMASs on an LPAR. Typically, the only time you would do this is where the maintenance point lives for a KIX plug. We don't usually recommend that you connect the local MASs to the maintenance point so that that it's available to shut down when needed to apply maintenance. Another reason you might run multiple CMASs on an LPAR is to, if you're going to do a phase migration and you want to bring up another CMAS on that LPAR and bring a CICS down from one release of CPSM and then start it up on another one so you can phase over maybe even 100 CICSs at a time. When you do that, and this is where you can run into problems if you don't plan accordingly, is when a CICS comes up, typically in one of the DYU PARMs, it'll always specify KIXPLEX, which is a mandatory parameter, and says, I want to connect to KIXPLEX A. Which CMAS you connect to will depend on what CMASs are running on that LPAR, the sequence that they started, and the KIXPLEXs in which they manage. What we recommend is that if you are ever going to have more than one CMAS on an LPAR, is that in the EYU PARM for the LMAS, you specify CMAS SysID and give it the SysID of the CMAS that you expect it to connect to. Because quite often, the people will run without this, and the MAS will always connect to the CMAS that it had for the last couple of months, but the CMAS will start in a different sequence, and the users are surprised to see that a MAS will try to connect to a different CMAS than it had last time. Essentially, the last CMAS to start on the LPAR that is managing a particular KIXPLEX will by default be the one that a MAS will connect to if it doesn't specify a CMAS SysID. The other area of concern, and this can result in an unplanned outage, is, again, whenever you're running multiple CMASs on an LPAR, if you're not doing it all the time, is you have to ensure that there's enough scope common data spaces defined to ZOS on that LPAR. In the installation manual, there's a section about sys1.parmline updates to the IEA SysXX member. Particularly important for CPSM is the max CAD, which is the number of maximum common scope address spaces available on the LPAR. This is for all subsystems that use scope common data spaces on an LPAR, and more subsystems use them all the time. I believe the default is 50, and quite often, if there's not enough there, the CMAS will fail to initialize because we cannot create any more scope common data spaces. Let's go on to slide 16. One of the common questions that comes up is, how do I know what data spaces are currently active for CPSM on the LPAR? And the easiest thing to do is just issue a display job command for the EYUX subsystem. In this particular example, it's EYUX 320, which is the 3.2 version of transaction server. What's of interest here is if you look over under the address space column, as you'll see several rows where it says DSP name equals, and you have four characters, and then you have the last four are the sysident of the CMAS to which these data spaces are associated. So this is a good place to go when you want to see what data spaces currently exist on an LPAR. Let's go on to the next slide, 17, please. As far as the data space usage in a CMAS, as we mentioned previously, some of the data spaces are a scope common, which means they're shared between a MAS and a CMAS. Some are private to the CMAS only. Their existence and how long they last, you can tell easily by logging on the CMAS as a general KIX user. And running the COD0 transaction, that's our debugging transaction. The output you see here on slide 17 is a result of a list cache, that C-A-C-H-E command. And what it does is it lays out not only the name of the data space, but the second column is the ALET. And each one of those that you see here in bold that begin with 01FOXFOX, those are the scope common data spaces. If you go down to the fifth one where you see COM1, M32A, the ALEC for that is 0101 prefix. Those are private data spaces, so they're associated with the CMAS address space only. Typically, a CMAS will have six scope common data spaces, but for each of those data spaces, if the CMAS needs to extend them beyond the 2 gigabyte limit, it will create a second shared data space. So we tell you in the manual that you need at least six, but you could need up to 12 scope common if they were all using the maximum amount of storage available, so plan accordingly. Let's move on to the other thing of interest here, though, too, is that I wanted to note is over on the right, there's a column that says high watermark allocated, HWM allocated, and that'll tell you the size of a data space. These are of interest typically when your MVS storage group might get an alert saying that the CPSM is using excessive storage and they would like you to look into it. You can go in here and take a look and see. In this particular example, I had run something in my web user interface so that I would generate a second DAT data space. So you'll see here on the second row, I have a DAT2M32A. And then on the next row down, there's a DAT1M32A. The DAT1 is the initial cache we had for this, and its size has already been at 2 gigabytes, so we had to allocate another shared cache. So this is just a place you can go to take a look at that. Let's move on to slide 18, please. Another question will come up is, if the data spaces are quite large, users will say, well, I'll just cycle the CMAS and it'll go away. And then they find that the MBS storage group says, well, they actually, the storage is still being used. The data spaces are not really owned by the CMAS itself, but they're owned by the EYUX subsystem job. So in this case, the CMAS was shut down, and a display job command on the EYUX 320 subsystem job shows that the private data spaces are all gone, but there's still data spaces left, and these are all the ones that are scope common shared, because when I did this particular request, I had CICS regions that were still active that had previously connected to CMAS. So just shutting down a CMAS does not get rid of the scope common data spaces. Let's move on to slide 19, please. So this is just another display of the EYUX 320 job after the CMASs for this release were shut down on the LPAR, and all the MASs were shut down. And now you see the data spaces are all gone. What would happen next is when a CMAS for this release restarted on the LPAR, it would ask for the creation of the data spaces anew, and they would start out at their minimum 90 meg allocation total, and that storage would no longer be used by CPSM at this time. One other point is that it's not, and users have run into this, is they will recycle the MASs to get them to go away. But it's important to note that they have to all be down at the same time. If any one is still left active, or if any one starts to come back up, the data spaces that are shared will still be held. So the key is that the CMAS is for that particular release, and all the MASs must be down at the same time in order for those data spaces to be actually released. Let's go on to slide 20, and Brad will discuss some.
Hi, how are you? So one of the things that we need to do is, and if you, like I said, you're dealing with service, is to stay current on maintenance. One of the things you want to make sure is that the maintenance point CMAS is always at the highest release of CPSM. You can run a maintenance point at 3.2 and have other CMASs connect to it at 3.1 or 2.3. But the maintenance point CMAS has to be at the highest level. It also is preferred to have the maintenance point CMAS if you have a rolling situation where you roll maintenance out LPAR by LPAR. It was preferred to have the maintenance point be updated as far as maintenance is concerned first also. When you're thinking about deploying new functions in CPSM, such as RTA or BAS, it's a good idea to go out, and it's just like doing an installation. Verify what maintenance is out there and get as current as possible, because there's been some improvement made in dealing with CPSM growth, a KixFlex growth. So can we go to slide 21, please? I'll talk about the maintenance point CMAS. The maintenance point CMAS is really... it's not the first place you put maintenance on. Well, it is the first place you put maintenance on, but it's not anything to do with PTFs. The maintenance point CMAS is the CMAS in which all other CMASs sync their data repository to. So it's important that he gets upgraded first. So one of the things that we would like to see happen is not to have any MASs at all connect to the maintenance point CMAS if possible. It will... that way you don't have to worry about adding maintenance to Kix regions or working regions before they're ready. And this adds, there's a complexity here too, because if you add more and more, you have multiple LPARs, multiple CMASs, and now you start defining multiple KICS plexes. It's possible to end up with maintenance points scattered throughout a cisplex, where you have a maintenance point on one LPAR, and you have multiple maintenance points across the KICS plex. When it comes time to add maintenance, this can be difficult because now you've got to get your maintenance point up to the highest level first, and he may be participating in multiple KICS plexes. One CMAS can manage multiple KICS plex environments. So if he's not the maintenance point, you're having to make him come up to a level of maintenance before you're ready for him. And this especially bodes true in a test and a production environment. MBS has suggested that in a cisplex environment that you keep your production and your test environments on separate LPARs. Don't share the LPARs. You don't want to have to upgrade your production CMAS just because you are introducing or trying to phase in CPSM in a test environment. So that's one of the things, that's a good practice, is to keep your test and your production environment on separate LPARs. And like I said earlier, if you're applying maintenance across multiple LPARs and you can't do that in a good phased way, it might be a good idea to put your maintenance point CMASs all in one LPAR. Slide 22, please. Speaking of maintenance, one of the things you run into is that most people, unless they're running with the SMPE D lives and T lives, they copy their maintenance into their RPL concatenations when they come up. Sometimes things drop through the cracks, or there's an LLA version that's in use and you're just not aware of. CPSM provides a debug transaction called COD0, and one of the things, I think we saw that the output of that a little earlier, but you can also list methods. And in this case, what we've shown here is that we've listed all the methods in the CMAS. And if you look down to the highlighted section, EYU0CAMD is running at UK14927. It also gives us the load point, and that way we can tell exactly what level of maintenance that you're running in your system. It's a very convenient tool. Could I have slide 23, please? CPSM, when you're dumping a CMAS, a lot of times we need those 2 gig data spaces that are out there along with the ASID of the CMAS, or maybe even the ASID of a couple of LMASs or an LMAS along with it. This can cause problems. If you don't have adequate space to take these dumps, you end up with a partial dump, and we just try our best to do with what we have, but a lot of times, if we don't get a full dump, we can't work on the problem. So here, this is the display dump status command, and here you're checking out max space. For a small KICSplex, we suggest 200 meg or 2 gig for the max space parameter. And if you're running with a reasonably large KICSplex environment, 6 gig or 600 meg would be adequate. Most times. But there's ways, what we need to do is to verify this in an environment where you're not under pressure. So can we have slide 24, please? One of the things you can do is use the change dump command. The very first command at the top there is a set, CD set S dump max space equal 5 meg. Well, I've just suggested that we run with at least 200 meg in a small KICSplex environment. 200,000 meg in a small KICSplex environment. So here, setting this pretty low, we're going to have a problem. In this case, Bill took an EYU XZSD and forced a dump. And what happened, if you look at the bottom of the screen, is that a partial dump was taken. The thing to do here is to do this a number of times when you're not in a problem situation. It's nothing worse than to get into a bad situation and then find out that you don't have enough space to take the dump to work on a problem. So here I would suggest that you go in and you run this a couple of times using the XZSD method, and dump all of the data spaces and a Kix region and see if you can take all of the dump and okay without a partial dump message. Could I have slide 25, please? After the dump change, after you do the change dump command and increase your max space, you can see that we can get all of the data spaces down below. All went well. Slide 26. The S data parms that CPSM requests are pretty much the same as Kix. The only difference that I've really found is that WLM, the workload management related data areas, needs to be dumped along with the SQA, the RDN. You know what the S data forms are for Kix. They're pretty much the same except we need WLM also. Next slide, please. Slide 27. Starting the XZSD method. XZSD is the method in CPSM that is responsible for taking dumps. And you can start that using the debug transaction COD0. The command is COD0, and then go in and issue the start XZSD command. And here again, we talked about change dump. If you get into a situation, go use the change dump. Slide 28, please. This is actually the what you will be presented with after you hit start XZSD in a CMAS. And if you look down at the details, the comp 1, comp 2, comp 3, I've only asked for 4 different data spaces to be dumped. And there's some new things that have been added at the bottom. Could I have slide 29, please? Down at the bottom of the XZSD command, you have a chance to ask if you want to broadcast this, where we can take dumps across multiple LPARs. If you'll put a question mark in the broadcast parentheses, you'll get a prompt. And on that prompt, you can specify, I want to broadcast to another CMAS, or I want to broadcast to a Plex so that I take a dump all the way across the Plex, or you can specify set. Set is just using a workload set, and that will dump the CMASs and the TORs, I believe, that are associated in a workload. So in this situation, we had selected Plex, and after you hit enter, you're brought back to the main screen again, and you have to put in, you see the asterisk there, beside character, context, and there you put in the context would be WJBCM320 is actually a Kixplex. So when you hit enter on this, can I have slide 30, please? When you hit enter on this, that means that a dump is taken. Yeah, you had actually hit PF3 or type in end on the command line. That will cause a dump to be issued across the Plex. In this situation, we have 2 CMASs invoked. So the first message, if you look under the dump command, the CMAS is WJBCM32A, and dump was taken. And if you look underneath the dump, the transaction that was active during the dump was COD2, which is the transaction that runs because of COD0. And then at the next one is the same message being issued, XZ0910. The CMAS, the context of the CMAS is different. This is off of a different job log. It's WJBCM32B, and you'll see that the task running is XLST. XLST is the just general workhorse task that runs under CPSM. Could I have slide 31? Oh, I think that's Bill.
All right. The next few slides are going to be some CMAS and MAS-related SIT PARMs and EYU PARMs. The ones we're just going to look at today are by no means the only ones that are important, but what I'd like to stress in regard to CMAS is quite often we'll see that a new environment for CPSM where the users will say, I've got my SIT that I use for my CICSs already. I'll just use my existing SIT and I'll change a couple of parameters for the CMAS because that's what I'd like to do. We really don't recommend that because it quite often winds up in loading things into the CMAS environment, which we don't prefer, or putting on options that are not compatible with what's required for the CMAS. In the CICS installation guide, there's an entire table which will show you the recommended SIT parameters for a CMAS, a MAS, and a WUI server. But the ones I want to mention specifically today is to ensure that for the trace parameters that aux trace is turned on. And the reason that it's fine in the CMAS is because if you look a little further down, sys trace is turned off. You do not need to run CICS system trace in a CMAS. We may, from the service side, on a very specific type of a problem, but it would be very rare that we would require you to actually turn on CICS trace in a CMAS. So it's typically turned off. User tracing is turned on because CPSM utilizes user tracing when we have to do specific debugging. But aux trace has to be on, again, because the CMAS may be up for weeks or months at a time, and we cannot afford to lose a single exception over the life of that CMAS. The other parameter there is aux trace switch. And again, this is going to be tied to how long you typically leave a CMAS active. The Kix installation guide will tell you to run aux trace switch all, so that if it goes to A to B and B back to A, it'll fill up. But if you took note at the very beginning of this presentation where we'd like you to automate on the DFH TR0110 messages where the aux trace switches, you would kick in an IEB general job and copy the aux trace. So if you have automation in place, on the DFH TR0110s, then aux trace switch all is the recommendation. If you don't have that in place yet, run with significantly large allocated A and B data sets, and you can run with aux trace switch next, and that way we at least have, and again, this is just from experience, we usually have from the time the CMAS started up until you fill both the A and the B to look at. And usually things that happen maybe during startup is what led to a problem later. As far as auto install, quite often we'll get in and we'll go into a remote screen viewing session or an AOS session online, and we need to log on to our debugging transaction in a CMAS and find out that auto install hasn't been set up. We would it's always a very good plan to have terminal auto install available in the CMAS so that we can use our debugging transaction. And also COLU. COLU provides us with some reporting output on CPSM diagnostics. Another thing that is a recommendation is that you have auto-install for console so that you can use MVS modify commands to even shut down a CMAS if you can't get in, to use a COSD transaction. Along with that, as far as the spooling capability, make sure you have spool, yes, specified for your CMAS in the set so that we can run things like CLU and the stack transaction to get the output. The next area of importance is related to forward recovery. Again, if a CMAS is going to be up for weeks or a month at a time, the question comes up is, I need to back up my data repository, but I don't want to shut down. In that case, you would follow the general CICS recommendations for using the backup file open facility, which requires forward recovery logs. You can do that for the data repository so it can be eligible for backup while open. Along with that is the AKP FREC, the activity key point frequency. For a CMAS, you can just set that down. About 500 should be fine. Another parameter that is a good one to use is the startup parameter. Most often you can run with start equals auto, and I don't want to really discourage you from doing that. That's really fine, but we have found that again, because the CMAS is usually up for very long periods of time, and when it does usually get cycled, part of that cycling has to do with applying maintenance. And at times, some of that maintenance is introducing changes to a transaction definition or adding a new one or a new program that wasn't there before. So really, we recommend, if you can, just run with start equals initial in your CMAS. That way, the group list will reinstall, and you'll pick up changes when you do have to recycle. Let's move on to slide 32, please. Another thing that at least twice a year comes up, and there's ways to mitigate it, is again, typically the CMAS may not cycle at the time change weekends. Our recommendation is if you can recycle it on the time change weekend, do it. But if you can't, make sure you have the Kix auto reset time set to yes, so that at least if at midnight, the time will get reset. The CMAS has many functions that rely on CICS interval control services for timing, depending on whether we're swinging forward or back, is whether or not things are not going to occur at all or they're going to hang. again, if it's going to be up and you know that you're there at the time is going to change, issue a log on to the CMAS and do a perform reset time. Let's go on slide 33, please. These are now some of the EYU parts. If you look in the CISS installation guide, you'll notice that there's many EYU parts for both the CMAS, MAS, and the WUI server. We can't touch on all of them today, but just some that have come up in the past. One is controlling auxiliary storage. If you are in an environment where storage is monitored very closely, and if all of the storage is used up and other address spaces start paging, TSO users can't log on, you know, that the MVS group may come to you and say, this is critical. And they'll go in and say, oh, it's CPSM is using all the auxiliary storage, and you're going to have to do something about that so that we don't have to wind up having even IPL the LPAR. Several releases ago, CPSM introduced two EYU PARMs to help you if you are tight on auxiliary storage and need to monitor. And these are the MaxAux CPSM and MaxAux Total. What these allow you to do is say that any particular CMAS in the MaxAux CPSM, the default is at 50%. We'll look at the number of page slots that are available on the LPAR. And if you code this, you can control how many are in there. If we start to use more than what you specify, the CMAS will issue a message, and it will shut itself down. It'll actually issue a cancel command with the ARM restart parameter. And what that will do is it'll shut down the address space, and then that storage could be returned, and the CMAS will restart. The other parameter, MaxAux total, is just the total available auxiliary storage slot on the LPAR. We default there to 70%, which is the same that the SRM component uses on the VOS before it starts to take actions on dispatching for address spaces. So if you would like to tune these before a CPSM uses more auxiliary storage than you would prefer, which your MVS group would allow a CMAS environment to use, you can go ahead and code these EYU PARMs. Back with concert with the kick sit spool equals yes parameter, the CMAS provides a spool class EYU PARM where you control the output class for things like the SAT and CYU output and backup as well. If the default class of P isn't good for you, or that would wind up letting the output go to the bit bucket, go ahead and change it to a controlled spool class. The next set of EYU PARMs were added fairly recently, and what these control are timeout processing. Over the years, many customers have asked for the ability to have some input to tuning when CPSM decides to timeout requests. The larger your CMAS network, the more obvious the desire is to want to be able to tune the timeouts. Typically, when we have to get data that's requested across multiple LPARs, we have internal multipliers on when we're going to time it out, allowing things to go longer and longer to complete. In conjunction with having a larger CMAS network, typically that's going to involve, you know, hundreds of CICSs on multiple LPARs. And we have certainly seen, and customers have experienced, a situation where they run a CPSM API batch job, and that thing is going to go out there and perform some file close-disable operations, and typically they can look at that batch job step, and it finishes in 4 seconds or 8 seconds for the scope of the request. But every once in a while, that batch API job hangs according to the operations. And in the reality, when we get down to the root cause, we can see that maybe the scope of the request affected 150 CICSs across 4 LPARs, and 149 of those requests completed, and it's only one particular CICS is not responding, so it didn't honor the request. And the way we work with the timeout is we wait till we get back all of the requests that we sent out, and when they're all back, we'll give you the results, unless a timeout occurs. So some users have said it would be nice that I've got enough history that I can see that if this thing runs more than, you know, 45 seconds, I would wish it would just time out earlier instead of having the batch job sit there and hang for 25 minutes before the timeout gets returned to the application. This is where the EZYU problems come in for the CMAS. So the first one is the timeout for back requests. And you can go ahead and code this down to a value of 10 seconds if you had to, but you can put in a value that's more appropriate to what you've seen in your environment. The next parameter is for timeout of online requests, and this is if you had API requests or things from the WUI server. These are API requests originating from the TIC region itself. They also affect if you are using the RTA components or in concert with monitoring when we ship requests down to a MAS to collect data. These can be timed out earlier as well. The last parameter is the polling interval, and that's basically how often the CMAS is going to wake up and go look at the timeout parameters to when he's going to decide to time out a request. Again, these three combined can be used if you are in a very large environment and you have batch API jobs that hang a long time, or if you're pre-3.2 and you have TSO end user interface users who maybe make a request and they know typically it comes back in a minute or less, and now they've been hanging out there for 8, 10, 15 minutes, pay attention out, and they really just don't want to do that anymore. You can lower those values. Let's go on to slide 34, please. Now we'll look at a WUI parm. There's many, many WUI parms, but one that is of particular interest specifically to if you're new to 3.2 or you're only using the WUI server now is the default warning count. TSO and user interface, each user can specify a warning record count in their individual ISPF profile. What that controls is typically something like terminals. People are going in and they type in the terminal view, and in a very large environment, that might bring back 500,000 terminals. The user really doesn't have any intention of actually looking at 500,000 terminals, but without the warning record count, the user doesn't know that ahead of time. They invoke the terminal view, hit enter. That data gets returned, and quite often what can happen is the CMAS will get all this data back and try to copy it into private NVS storage, and you'll see that the CMAS will have an 878 admin dump because there's not enough storage to hold all this data. So that's where you have the warning record count. In relation to the web user interface, you can specify a WUI parm called default warning count that will serve the same purpose. Basically give the user a warning before all this data is requested. Let's move on to slide 35 to see an example. In this particular case, the WUI was started with a warning record count of 25. A user had requested to look at the local files with the context and scope set across the entire TICplex. This is a small group, but it came back with a warning record count message telling you that there's 33 of these entries. User this time, he can cancel out. He can hit OK and say, yes, I'd like to look at the data. Or if we go on to slide 36, the user has the opportunity to subset that scope. He could either go to a KICS group, or he could just go down to an individual KICS region. As in this example, we went to one KICS region. The user did want to see the data. He hit enter, and now there was only 5 of those files. That was less than the warning record count, and the data is displayed. So the default warning count is your equivalent to the warning record count in TSO. The general benefit of doing it as an EYU parm is many users have come in and from TSO and said, well, this user didn't know to set it, but from the WUI, this would apply to all users. Let's go on to slide 37 now. Here's some EYU parms that for the MAS itself. One of the ones that in recent days, again, as CXCS regions themselves grow much larger, is a parameter called message bucket. It defaults to 1024, and it's basically the general purpose set of storage that's sitting in the MAS data space that we use when we're collecting information on topology changes. So for data sets, FEPI environments, connections that are coming and going, truths, glues. It's also used on the other exits we sit on in a KICS region. So when you're taking a system dump or transaction dump, signing on and signing off, let's say auto install delete delay occurs, and these were signed on terminals, and all of a sudden there's a burst of activity where we sign off thousands of users. That will drive message bucket usage. We don't externalize that we run out of these things. What does occur is, and why we like to save the CMAS Austrace data set, is there will be an exception called with the debug text of XDAT lost. That's that loss that gets cut in a CMAS and gets produced in the MAS and shipped up to the CMAS. That will tell us, one, that this event occurred, and it will also tell us how many buckets we didn't have. We can use that exception trait to figure out how to increase that amount. Again, the other effect this could have is on sometimes on workloads. We'll have a user that says things have been running fine. They look at the workload distribution and say, for some particular reason, we don't seem to be routing to an AOR for a period of time. We don't know why. When we've investigated the root cause, we've found that during one of these peak bursts of activity of using these message buckets, that we had an XDAT lost, and that one happened to be for a transaction dump completing. Target AOR is considered unhealthy if a transaction dump is occurring at the point in time we want to make a route selection. If we miss a transaction dump complete, that AOR will appear as sick, and it won't get healthy until it's essentially recycled or the agent is stopped and started. So that is why it's critical that message buckets be sufficient enough so that we can never really run out. One other EYU PARM that users have asked about in the past, also related to the workload, is the WM load count. People use TRAN classes within CICS for various purposes, and the effect of this is twofold. By default, when we're looking at the load that's in a target AOR for workload, we look at all of everything that's queued up. That includes things that are queuing in a transaction class, one or more. Some users prefer that. Exactly what we do that if they've got things backed up in a TRAN class, they want us to consider that as part of the load and maybe not choose that AOR. Other users, though, come in and say, I know exactly what I'm doing. These are little bad things to kick off. I'm using the TRAN class to serialize my TRAN class into one, and I don't care if they, you know, there's 30 or 40 of them backed up in there. That's exactly what they're supposed to do. They're really not affecting my online workload. I would rather you not count the backup, the queuing in that TRAN class as part of the load. You can specify for the WM load count an EYU PARM called max task queued, and we'll only consider task queuing for max task and not in the TRAN class. Let's go on to slide 38, please. Another set of EYU PARMs for a MAS that were added recently, again, this to address customer concerns, is the alternate long-running tasks. Prior to these, the introduction of these EYU PARMs, there was a long-running task in the MAS called CONL, and its primary job was to service requests, either from batch APIs, from the TSON user interface, from the GUI, unless you had split off specifically requests for real-time analysis. They would also run under this task, and it served us well over the years. But users have found that every once in a while, and it could be an environmental situation in the KIX region where we can't get stored or something else, but something blocks processing under that CONL task, and it can't continue until whatever that situation is freed up. Not only does it block it for that one region, but now when I make a request from the TSO end user interface or a batch API job or the GUI that includes that scope, I start to see things hanging. I don't get a response because all the other ones responded, but this particular KIX region that's got a hang-up can't respond because the CONL task can't even process the request. So what was introduced were alternate long-running tasks, and that's this MAS, ALT, LRT, CNT. You can go from zero, meaning you don't want them, or up to five additional tasks. And once you activate these tasks, you'll see it start up, if I said five, that all five of these CONA transactions will start up. One of the other things you need to also know, too, is that since this is a new transaction, we have plus plus hold telling you to make sure you define a security environment for it. But that's another thing where users have run into is they need to make sure that the CONA transaction is defined as security so that it can actually process the request. But once you have these CONA tasks, what they can do is the CONA will get their request from the batch API job or TSO or the EY, and they'll process it and return the data. But if for any reason a KIX hangs up onto the CONA task, and that request is blocked, and now another user from some other place comes in and they want to look at something else, in the past, they would hang because this particular region's task was blocked. In this case, there's another EYU department called MAS ALT LRT time, and that's the time in seconds that you will want to let the CONA task who's processing a request to wait before he will assign new requests to an alternate CONA task, one of the other ones you have started. And what this will allow you to do is, you know, the first request is blocked out there. It might be trying to do a quiesce of RLS files, and it's waiting on the SMS server, and it's just not going to complete for a while for whatever reason. And somebody else just wanted to look at the task view or KIX region. That would wind up going to one of the alternate CONA tasks, and then that CONA task will process requests as long as he's not hung up. If he hung up, he would switch to another one. So this is a very, very good recommendation just to ensure that if one particular request winds up blocking there, it doesn't affect future requests coming in. Let's go on to slide 39. I think now we're ready for polling for any questions. We provided a lot of information today, but we also know that there's a lot more we can discuss. So if you have questions about what we have today, or if there's something specific that you might like to discuss in a future presentation, you can bring that up as well.
Thank you, Bill and Brad, for a great presentation.
And we have a question from Tim Handler from Wachovia.
Hey, guys. Can I just get the number again to download this presentation?
I think that Elijah would have to get that.
No, it started with 700.
701-0443.
701-0443? Correct.
Thank you. We'll conclude the presentation. What the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you for presenting today.